and biases, they often make assumptions about others even before meeting them. They even ignore their own perceptions to make them conform to foregone conclusions. These assumptions muck up our perceptual windows onto the world, showing us an unchanging, often flawed, version of the situation. Great negotiators are able to question the assumptions that the rest of the involved players accept on faith or in arrogance, and thus remain more emotionally open to all possibilities and more intellectually agile to a fluid situation. Unfortunately, back in 1993, I was far from great. Everyone thought the crisis would be over quickly. The bank robbers had little choice but to surrender, or so we thought. We actually started the day with intelligence that the bank robbers wanted to surrender. Little did we know that was a ruse their ringleader planted to buy time. And throughout the day, he constantly referred to the influence the other four bank robbers exerted on him. I hadn't yet learned to be aware of a counterpart's overuse of personal pronouns, we, they, or me, I. The less important he makes himself, the more important he probably is, and vice versa. We would later find out there was only one other bank robber, and he had been tricked into the robbery. Actually, three robbers, if you counted the getaway driver, who got away before we even entered the scene. The lead hostage taker was running his own counterintelligence operation, feeding us all kinds of misinformation. He wanted us to think he had a bunch of co-conspirators with him from a number of different countries. He also wanted us to think that his partners were much more volatile and dangerous than he was. Looking back, of course, his game plan was clear. He wanted to confuse us as much as he could until he could figure a way out. He would constantly tell us that he wasn't in charge and that every decision was the responsibility of the other guys. He would indicate that he was scared, or at least a little tentative, when we asked him to pass along certain information. And yet he always spoke with a voice of complete calm and absolute confidence. It was a reminder to my colleagues and me that until you know what you're dealing with, you don't know what you're dealing with. Though the call had come in about 8:30 a.m., by the time we arrived across the street from the bank and made contact, it was probably about 10:30 a.m. The word when we came on the scene was that this was going to be cookie-cutter, by-the-book, short and sweet. Our commanders thought we'd be in and out of there in 10 minutes because the bad guys supposedly wanted to give themselves up. This would later become a problem when negotiations stalled and command became embarrassed because they'd made the mistake of sharing this early optimism with the press, based on all the early misinformation. We arrived on the scene to take a surrender, but the situation went sideways almost immediately. Everything we assumed we knew was wrong. Calm the Schizophrenic. Our Negotiation Operations Center, NOC, was set up in an office in a bank immediately across a narrow street from the Chase branch. We were way too close to the hostage site, so right away we were at a disadvantage. We were less than 30 yards from the crisis point, where ideally you want to have a little more of a buffer than that. You want to put some distance between you and whatever worst-case scenario might be waiting at the other end of the deal. When my partner and I arrived, I was immediately assigned to coach the police department negotiator on the phone. His name was Joe, and he was doing fine, but in these types of situations, nobody worked alone. We always worked in teams. The thinking behind this policy was that all these extra sets of ears would pick up extra information. In some standoffs, we had as many as 5 people on the line, analyzing the information as it came in, offering behind-the-scenes input and guidance to our man on the phone, and that's how we were set up here. We had Joe taking the lead on the phone, and another 3 or 4 of us were listening in, passing notes back and forth, trying to make sense of a confusing situation. One of us was trying to gauge the mood of the bad guy taking the lead on the other end, and another was listening in for clues or tells that might give us a better read on what we were facing, and so on. Students of mine balk at this notion, asking, "Seriously, do you really need a whole team to hear someone out?" The fact that the FBI has come to that conclusion, I tell them, should be a wake-up call. It's really not that easy to listen well. We are easily distracted. We engage in selective listening, hearing only what we want to hear, our minds acting on a cognitive bias for consistency rather than truth. And that's just the start. Most people approach a negotiation so preoccupied by the arguments that support their position that they are unable to listen attentively. In one of the most cited research papers in psychology,